Welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report. We continue our review of the top business development technologies of 2005 with part two, the best products of the year. Here are Joe and Roger.
Welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report. I'm Joe Cullinane.
And I'm Roger Green.
Last podcast, we talked about our top five technologies. And this week, we're going to talk about our top five products. And those products are the iPod, specifically the video iPod. We're going to talk about Google Maps and Mashups, Sugar CRM 4.0, Skype, and our final product, Podomatic. So, Roger, what do you think of that, the choice of our five top products for the year?
Well, you know, it's really an impressive list in terms of the scope and the range of what's covered in 2005. I think it's going to be fun to talk about. I can't wait to listen to this show.
Well, and as you said, these are the things that we wished we had under our Christmas trees this year.
Exactly.
And I guess some of them we have loaded on our computers, so that's a good thing. Well, let's jump right into this. Let's talk about the iPod, and specifically the video iPod. And it was quite a year for the iPod. And the iPod has been both a product and a technology of the year. So this is really an impressive technology.
It is. And Joe, I just want to emphasize to our listeners again that we're looking at technologies that probably a lot of people are interested in for different reasons, and so are we, but we're mostly interested in it in terms of business development, how these products can become tools to help us build our businesses. So it's a narrow focus, and that's the only way we could fit all this into 30 minutes, too.
Right, and we must say that it was not easy to select these technologies and products in particular. We talked a lot about a number of different products, but these are the ones that we think have had an effect on business development and will have an effect in the future. And so what we're going to do, and as Roger mentioned, that is our main focus. How is this going to, you know, really rock and roll the world of business development? So we're going to talk a little bit about what is the specific product, why should you care about it, who's using it, and how can you use it? So Roger, let's talk a little bit about the video iPod in particular.
Yeah. The iPod is a fascinating platform because it's a classical problem that new technologies have in the marketplace, and it's the chicken and egg question. It's why should I build something that plays things if there's nothing to play on it yet? It's the classic problem. If you have a TV and there's only one television station, it's not going to be as interesting. It's like having one fax machine in the world. You need a few of them. And the video iPod is actually a great second act, because the first iPods, in essence, created the demand for a whole bunch of new things like MP3 file sharing, whether it was coming through a commercial source or whether it was coming through people ripping their own CDs into MP3 files and enjoying them as they commuted or whatever. But it also enabled a whole new type of communication, which is we called in the technology section, you know, the age of the podcast. And literally that occurred in 2005. So that's a whole new space. And what's being added to that now, because Apple has added the video capability to their iPods, is the fact that you can now look at and you can download and you can create, if you're so inspired, video programs, which can be something as exotic as a TV broadcast that's rechanneled over iPod-like devices, or it can be something like a PowerPoint presentation that you want to present to your potential prospects or customers. So the range of what this could do is quite amazing, and the fact that there are going to be literally millions of them in people's hands after this Christmas season means that it's worth building something for people who do that, because there are enough people out there who can take advantage of it straight away.
Right. Let's take a look at the numbers. And we've been really trying to find the specifics on the numbers. And as far as I can tell, there's about 30 million iPods out there today. And the projections for Apple for their fourth quarter, I'm not sure if it's their fourth quarter, but the quarter ending in December, is another 11 or 12 million of them. Now, as Roger has pointed out before, I guess the ones with the large hard drive, the 30 megabyte hard drive or whatever,
gigabyte
hard drive, is now exclusively the video iPod, right?
Yes, but that will undoubtedly change as because, for example, even on the new Nano, you can look at album covers on the screen. So it won't be long before all of them are doing some form of video.
So the Nano will have video as well, and that's an even smaller screen. So we're gonna. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Brazil, where they have those little typewriters with the big magnifying glasses. So that I imagine us all carrying around a huge magnifying glass in the future to be able to watch all this video.
Well, I think they say if you hold it 1 inch from your face, it's the same as a 50-inch screen. You know.
Right. So, and the other thing is that I had this discussion with someone recently is us baby boomers, they keep making things smaller, the picture smaller, the text smaller on things. They got to start figuring out that to address this marketplace, they got to make things big so we can see them. Let's now shift gears a little bit and talk about what are some of the applications? Why should we care about it and what can we do with this this video iPod? And I actually saw something when I was out in Silicon Valley that I thought was very interesting. There's a publication, a real estate publication, that covers high-end real estate. And they actually had an advertisement in there, and they talked about the ability to download sort of virtual tours of their properties to your iPod. And they actually showed a video iPod. And so I found that fascinating. So this is already being adopted in Silicon Valley, and I think real estate is a good application where you can download and take a virtual tour of a house. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I could see all kinds of things happening that way. Imagine if you wanted to go to a restaurant and you could download their menu with photographs of the food, and as you're heading to the restaurant, you pass your iPod around, and people are deciding whether they want the almond chicken or the mushu whatever. So it is pretty amazing when you think about the possibilities.
Well, and I understand that Apple may be working on the AromaPod, so you'll not only see it, you'll be able to smell it. And
yeah, I've had a lot of software this year that I could smell as I approach the computer. We won't talk about that too much.
Okay, getting back to the applications, I see this as a great tool for doing presentations. If you have a product that demos well, you could have a little product demonstration that could be downloaded. There could be a sales presentation that's downloaded. And we talked about this even in some limited cases, some training, so that you could download if you're going to make a call, you can load some specifics about a niche market or whatever into your iPod or your video iPod and view it before you actually go in on the sales call. So I see this product is having a lot of applications in the future for business development and sales, and not just in things like real estate or automobiles, but very complex business-to-business sales like heavy machinery and cranes and things like that, where it's a visual product and you can demonstrate the product.
And it's important to remember that while we're talking about the video iPod in this case, we're using it as an icon, in a sense, for all the products that will perform these kinds of functions. And with the convergence occurring the way it is, it's not only likely, it's definite that in 2006 you're going to see phones, cell phones, that have all of the video iPod capabilities as well as the ability to make telephone calls. So pretty soon everyone is going to be walking around with something that has some of these features and capabilities within it. So it's definitely upon us, and creative people are going to have a ball with figuring out how to make this into something that can help a business.
So we would suggest, if you haven't checked this out yet, that you get your hands on one of these things and think about how you can apply the video iPod to your business and how it can help you sell more and it can help your business development efforts. So that was our first product. Now we're going to talk about the second product, which is Google Maps and marketing mashups. Now, this was a difficult one for us because Google has done so many things and has so many products that it was really tough to narrow it down to one. But this is the one we picked. And Roger, you want to tell us a little bit about Google Maps and mashups?
Sure. I think that Google is almost like this box of Swiss chocolates where every one of them looks delectable in it. And you're right, Joe, it really creates a challenge to narrow it down. And we'll be talking about Google more in upcoming shows, so don't worry, we're not going to shortchange you on the Google discussion. But certainly from the standpoint of one thing that stands out in terms of what would be interesting from a business development perspective, the maps, and particularly as they're put together in what we call a mashup, which allows somebody who is external to Google to hook their data into Google products, that is a fascinating application. And I did mention in our last broadcast the Jobster application, which was a case where this nationwide job placement firm called Jobster had accessed Google's API, Google Maps' API, with their data list, which has all the jobs that are available around the U.S. And I took a look at it again just before Joe and I did this podcast to see what it looks like right now. And literally, when you go on the site, on the right-hand side of the webpage, and by the way, we'll put the link to that on the blog so you can go look at it, as we will for many of the other things we're going to talk about in these podcasts. But if you go to Jobster's site, you'll see on the right-hand side a map that says click here, and you can see the national job availability for any search you care to put in. And you can look at it nationally, or you can look at it within a region that you define, you know, 1 mile, 5 miles, 30 miles. Essentially, the mapping function is precisely what Google offers out of the box. What's special is that when you type in your job description with keywords and you describe the radius that you want to search for these jobs, the map that then pops up shows little Google push pins showing the jobs that are available physically on the map, how far they are from where you live or where you'd like to live. And you click on it, and you get the whole job description and precisely what you would see in a normal job offering. And again, this sort of boggles the mind when you consider all the possible things that you might want to let people know that's geographically related information. And what makes this so powerful is that Google doesn't particularly care what it is that you want to talk about, because it's up to you to make that link up using the mashup that we just described.
Yeah, and I see all kinds of applications for this technology in business development. For example, wouldn't it be nice to, if you were going to make sales calls in Silicon Valley, and you got a map and you were able to take all of your existing customers and have their locations come up on this map, if you were able to place some of the prospects you're working on in maybe a different color pin and some of your competitors' customers. And so you'd have your entire trip mapped out, where you're going to be going, where your appointments are potentially, who are your customers if you wanted to see them. It would be a tremendous planning tool in that respect.
Imagine if you walked into one of your customers and said, let me show you something on Google, and you show them where his biggest customers are and where your distribution centers are that will supply them with your products. And all of a sudden you see all of his big customers have distribution centers within about half a day's travel. And things like that, all of a sudden you can use this to display geographic information much easier than you ever could before.
Yeah, and think about planning. If you're in the process of planning your distribution, and you have sales reps and you have distributors and other partners that you work with, you can look at that geographic location of customers and prospects, and then map on your sales reps and see where you're covered and where you aren't. I mean, it's really there's really tremendous application for this.
Yeah, I've did a search on one this past weekend where I was looking for a Christmas present at the last minute, and it essentially did this exact thing where it took the item number that I was looking for and showed me a Google map and showed me the stores within a 10-mile radius that had stock on hand.
Yeah, and so there's another one. Think of, if you haven't played with it, go to Google. Play with it a little bit, and then think about how you can apply this specific product to your business and your business development needs. And as Roger said, we're going to be talking more about Google in future shows. I mean, they're a company that's really done a lot of things in 2005, and we'll have more to say about them. Next, we're going to talk about Sugar CRM, and we're going to talk about their 4.0 release in particular. And the way that I found out about Sugar CRM is a friend of mine who has a pretty innovative company is using that as their CRM package. But first, we could take a second to talk a little bit about what CRM is and our experience with it. I actually, back in the early 90s, I guess 92 or 93, worked with the first Windows-based Salesforce automation system, which was sort of the predecessor of CRM. And this is a technology that's had tremendous potential for years, but in my opinion has never really lived up to those expectations. So Roger, what do you think about CRM in general?
Yeah, CRM is interesting. I think CRM is a product which, as you said, Joe, was called for years Salesforce Automation. And I think they changed the name because of the bad rap that SFA systems got in general. When I was CIO at Cymer here in San Diego, I was asked to implement a Salesforce automation tool. And what we discovered when we went out and did our research is that Salesforce automation tools in general had the highest rate of failure by users of any product that was deployed to enterprises at that time. Something like 95% of the people who were surveyed hated them, and ultimately the systems didn't work. And I suppose that's to a great extent because the original Salesforce automation tools were really ways of managing a sales force. And we all know how much salesmen like to be managed, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I think that there were two issues that really undermine the success of CRM systems. I think the first is exactly what you said. There wasn't a lot of benefit in it for the individual sales rep. It was really seen more, it was really a sales management tool, and I think the sales reps really saw it as a just more paperwork, and in this case automated paperwork.
And a way to steal their Rolodex too.
Right. And so they didn't get a lot of value in it, and therefore they didn't embrace it. So it was very difficult to get them to maintain it. And I think the other issue was how difficult it was to implement, much more difficult than they sold it. And I've always said that if back when a lot of these implementations were being done, it was in the days of Anderson Consulting, and I've always said if you see a software sales rep show up at your office with their friend from Anderson Consulting or now one of the other consulting firms, run, because that means it's going to take a long time and you're going to be writing some big checks because their objective is to get in and stay in forever.
And in fact, all these products, which are enterprise strength products, industrial strength products, are often driven by IT initiatives as opposed to the sales department or the marketing group or business development. And that's another issue. And we've seen a change, just to sort of head down a slightly different path for a second. One of the companies that we looked at as having an interesting 2005, ultimately we didn't include their product here, is Salesforce.com. And they addressed one of the big gotchas, which has been associated with SFAs or even CRM products, which is that these are major IT initiatives. By the time you get the thing installed, implemented, and deployed, you're dealing with big expenses, computers being purchased, databases, and all this kind of thing. And essentially, Salesforce.com just crossed all that out and said, we'll host it for you. All you need to do is dump your contacts in and you can get going. And we know that that's had a tremendous effect on Salesforce.com's growth. But right. Another trend that's going in parallel to that, which is very interesting, is embodied in Sugar, which is open source. And that's one of the things that makes all of this very different, because Siebel came in. They were the transitional solution. So from the old Salesforce automation days, which is companies whose names you don't hear anymore and have we forgotten about, the next generation is really identified by Siebel. When you say the name Siebel, that epitomizes CRM systems, because they literally are the ones who coined the CRM acronym. And Siebel has been very effective in building a big business around it and selling a lot of software licenses at the same time.
Rod, you mean Oracle? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're just a bit ahead. You're two sentences ahead in the story. That's right.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, which also bears examination for, again, the cost of the databases behind all of these, which
right.
is why Oracle is very interested. The functionality of these systems has evolved a great deal, where they do a lot today, but that also makes them huge projects and can also make them very, very expensive from a licensing perspective and from a maintenance perspective. So up in the course of the last 2 years, what's evolved, what's emerged, is this application called Sugar, from this company called Sugar. And what Sugar CRM has done is used a commercial approach to open source. This is not a bunch of gurus or geeks who've gotten together and said, let's build this thing out of our sheer love of CRM and then let's give it to the world for free. What they've said is, let's get together and build it as if we were a company building an honest to goodness product. We're going to be a business. We'll raise capital. And then the question always comes up from the people who are going to give you the money to do this. So where do we come in? How do we get paid off? Where does the company monetize this? And in the commercial open source, what they say is, we're going to keep the newest and best features for those who pay for support, and we'll also give them the support around it. So you can download the software for free. You can either even fiddle with the source code if you like, but if you don't pay for it and it doesn't work right, you're kind of on your own, and you may not get the patches as quickly as you'd like. If you pay a monthly or a yearly fee, you can get full support. You get the new releases and patches, and you get some features and functions that aren't available to the people who have only the free version. And this has provided a new business model, in essence, for the software industry, which is this hybrid between licensed software and between software which is given away for free. And it actually seems to be a viable license. Another big winner, incidentally, in this whole area has been Red Hat with their Linux distribution. And they've turned it into a very profitable business, providing the manuals, the training, and the support around a product which you can download for free. So this is interesting for a number of different reasons.
Well, let's get into that, and let's look specifically why somebody who is looking at CRM systems would want to consider Sugar over, say, Salesforce.com or Siebel, Oracle Siebel, whatever they're going to call it. And why is this a better choice?
Well, there are a couple of reasons, and of course, cost enters into it early in the game, because whenever you're looking at an initiative today, you can't do it without considering what the ROI is going to be. If you can't get a reasonable return on your investment, there's really no point in even starting the initiative. And one of the problems with big systems like this in general, and even if they're not big in terms of managing thousands of people in your enterprise, if they're big in terms of their importance to your revenue, you've got to do them right. And one of the areas where people end up shortchanging themselves is by not budgeting enough money to actually deploy and implement these things, and instead the money gets sucked up into licenses. And by the time you finish paying Oracle for the database and you finish paying Siebel for the application, and you're ready to start deploying it, you realize you really don't have the money to implement something that captures and automates what your business processes are and really makes the thing work like it was designed for your business. So for a lot of companies, they say, well, we couldn't have afforded this, or we couldn't have afforded to have done it right if we had to pay for everything. But since we're getting the software for free, the database as well as the application, we can now put that same money that we would have spent for licenses into deploying it properly. So that can make a big difference to the success of a project like this.
Right. And in fact, companies have already traded out Salesforce.com and some of the other CRM vendors. Covalent, in particular, has done that. And that was the reason. It wasn't necessarily functionality, it was a lower cost. They could save money by implementing Sugar CRM. And I think this is something we're going to talk more about in the future as well, this whole open source area. And I know that's an area you're very interested in, Roger, and
It
have a
is.
lot of knowledge about. And we're going to talk about that and why that's important to business development and how that's really changing the whole software industry. But that's for a future.
That's right. We could spend a lot of time, and we will, talking about that and how to get the advantages without the risks. The other interesting thing is that being smart guys, the people at Sugar have watched Salesforce.com, and they've also deployed their solution as something that you can have as a hosted application. So you can decide you want to buy it outright, or just download it and deploy it on your own with your own techies, or you can have them run it for you as a host, and they can simply manage the application for you. They have a third option, which is interesting too, which is that they'll actually sell you a quote appliance, which is all of the stack that you need, the underlying operating system and the web server and all the pieces that you need fully integrated and installed on a piece of hardware, and they ship the hardware to you, and basically you plug it into your network, into your outlet, and you've got something up and running. So they've really looked at all the things that have evolved over the past 3 or 4 years in this space and learned very well from them.
Yeah, and I think just circling back to why is CRM important, the CRM is a very important application for businesses and business development, in my opinion, because this is the database of where all of your customers live. And there are a lot of people still using ACT. A lot of sales reps are still using ACT, the contact management system, because it brings value. But there's also a lot of analytics involved, and a lot of value can be built in for salespeople. So we're not saying that, you know, CRM systems are something that you shouldn't have. I think what we are saying is that now you've got some solutions that can really provide the value you want at a cost that makes it worth your while. So we'll talk more about CRM in the future and probably specifically Sugar. But let's move on to our fourth product, and that's our old friend Skype. And again, we are using Skype for this broadcast today, this podcast. So if you don't like it, blame Skype. But a lot of people seem to like Skype, and let's talk about Skype, Roger.
Yeah, the numbers actually speak for themselves when you talk about the magnetic appeal of something like this. The rate of change in this area is really phenomenal. If you'd try to get your mind around these numbers a little bit, right now at any given time, you're going to have about 3 million Skype users online. 3 million online at any given time.
In fact, there's 2,445,000 right now.
There you go, as we speak. And the total number of people who have downloaded the Skype application over the past year or so is about 67 million people. Now, that's an impressive number, no matter how you look at it. Even though it's a global number, it's very, very impressive. And most recently, and we talked about this in the last podcast, and we all know this, I'm sure, is that eBay recently purchased Skype for about $3 billion. So obviously they see some value and some worth in that as it rolls out. And the question that we ask about why eBay bought this is the same question that we should be asking ourselves as to why we would want to be using this. Clearly, eBay's got something in mind, and by analyzing that a little bit, we might be able to figure out some things it could do for our businesses as well. And one thing for sure that it does, and we this is pretty obvious, is that it enables free voice contact on websites, on blogs. You can all of a sudden voice-enable virtually any web-based contact that you have with your prospects and customers.
Yeah, and I think as we talked about the global nature of business now, where you're no longer just talking to people in New Jersey, now you're talking to people in Bombay and all over the world, and the idea that you're going to pay, you know, $5 a minute to talk to somebody in another location is ridiculous with this application. So we have spent some time talking about this before, and we will. What about specifically? What could somebody out there do to apply this to their business today?
Well, it's a good question, Joe, and it's always I call that the money question, because it's really the most important one you can ask about any of these technologies or any technology that a business is going to spend money deploying. And I've just jotted down a few thoughts about what makes it special to have a Skype conversation with a business contact rather than picking up the telephone or the cell phone and calling them there. And I actually came up with a few thoughts. It has a feeling of fraternity around it, like you're part of a select club for early adopters. I've encouraged a couple of my business contacts to install Skype, people who never knew about it before, and they were tickled with how easy it was to get running, and I actually can now see when they're online, when they're sitting at their computer, so that you have this element of presence, that you know who's out there and if they're available. And the other characteristic is that they never, ever have a secretary answer their Skype calls.
Right,
so
right, that's right.
You literally fly in under the radar, and if you don't abuse it, people will enjoy seeing that Skype call come in.
So Skype was our fourth product. Now, our final product for 2005, and that is if you go to our podcast at Cullinane and Green Report at Podomatic.com, you will see our fifth product, which is Podomatic. And we did a pretty extensive search of products for this podcast. And just a little background, I've been doing blogs for a while now. In fact, Roger, I think, had a blog in 1995 before anybody
That's right.
even knew. It wasn't even called blogs then.
No, it wasn't.
And I've also been doing podcasting for a while. And we found this to be a very difficult thing to do, because for my blog, I use TypePad, which is a very nice blogging tool, very sophisticated tool. And I was able to do pretty much everything I wanted to do, but I couldn't do podcasting at the time. So I used another, what I think is a good product, Audio Blog, that allowed me to create the podcasts. And then you could upload to iTunes and upload to your blogs from there. But it seemed like there should be something out there that allowed you to do easily create podcasts and to do blogging. And so Roger went out and found Podomatic.
Yeah, Podomatic is an extraordinary product because it mitigates the biggest risk that we all have when we try using a new technology, which is getting all the pieces to work together, the gears to mesh, and to get it to work as a single system. And this is what discourages many people from becoming early adopters of technologies, is that it's just too darn difficult to get all the pieces to work together. In the enterprise world, they call this system integration, and anyone who's done it knows that's where the rubber meets the road, because if you can't get the pieces to play together, you're never going to get the result you want. So the issues with putting a podcast together are pretty wide-ranging. You need to be able to record what you're doing from an audio perspective. You need to be able to edit it a bit. You might want some music like we've got at the beginning and the end of the podcast. You want to put together a few different pieces into one show. You want to be able to do this in an integrated way and then somehow get it up to the site that's going to host it, which could be a totally different one than has other tools. So it gets rather frightening and daunting to people who are not genetically nerdish. So when I came across Podomatic, I was extremely surprised and happy to find that they've essentially integrated all of this into one single web-based application. So they've got it designed so that you can record directly online using a headset or a microphone at your computer. They've got it if you don't have a computer, you can actually, through another service they've hooked up with, record it directly online using your cell phone or your landline and make a podcast right from the field. You can add music to your podcast from an existing library of what is now known as podcast safe music, meaning that it's in the public domain, so you don't have to worry about getting sued by the record makers. They have a thing called Mixomatic, which is an online mixer for bringing together all these audio elements right online. You don't have to have anything installed on your computer. They host it. When you're finished doing the mixing and the recording of all this, they actually host the podcast for you. They'll generate the statistics for you. They'll get you listed on iTunes. And in the past week or so, they've even announced that they support video. So you can do this, what we were talking about for the video iPod, you can now do that on Podomatic as well.
Yeah, now, don't worry about seeing us on video for a while. As we've said before, we have Roger and I have faces for radio. So, and
the small screen plays to our advantage in this case.
Right, right.
Now, amazingly, Joe, this is all free. That's the part that really is shocking. And this goes back to the open source model again. How do they make a living on free? It's not like the Marx Brothers where they can make it up on volume.
Right.
Now, in fact, what happens is there is always a version or two which have more features, which, by the way, is a double-edged sword, because as soon as you have more features, it means you have to know more things about how to use these features. But for a little more money, you can have a more sophisticated version that lets your web page, your blog site look more customized, and things of that sort. So they're banking on the fact that of every 10 people who come on for the free one, some number of people will say, gee, this is great, I love it, I'm going to advance to the more expensive one and start paying them. And in fact, that's what Joe and I are going to be doing soon as well.
Right. I had a brief conversation on Friday with Johnny Mansoor, who's the VP of Business Development and one of the founders of Podomatic. And he said they're going to have some big announcements coming and a professional version of Podomatic. And I think we should point out that we're using the free version right now. We're not using any of the advanced features. And by the way, this is a good opportunity to encourage you to visit our blog that goes along with this podcast at cullenaneandgreen.podomatic.com. And so go check it out, because we're going to have links to all of these stories. And as time goes on and we're using the professional version of Podomatic, we're going to have more and more features on that. But that will be the place that you can go if you want to learn more about these things or to communicate with us. They have a technology that allows you to leave a voicemail comment for us. So you
That's
keep
right.
it clean, because this is a PG-13 rated podcast. We don't want to have to put explicit on here. But it's really a neat product, and so far we're enjoying using it. And the good folks at Podomatic have agreed to be interviewed for a future podcast. So stay tuned for that as well.
Now, one of the things we're going to add to our blog site, which is actually the host of this, is some links where you can go listen to some podcasts from other people who are in business, so that you can get some idea as to how this works and what people are doing with it, and learn by example.
Yeah, and we want you to know that you're now listening to the leading business development podcast out there. So
that's right.
You're already with the number one podcast, and we're only going to make it better over time. Well, thank you for tuning into this podcast. This was our podcast about our favorite products for 2005. And those products, in summary, included the iPod, and particularly the video iPod, Google and their Maps and Mashups, Sugar CRM 4.0, Skype, and Podomatic. Yeah, and stay tuned, because our next podcast should be really fun. That's going to be our top trends of 2005. And obviously, those will lead into 2006 as well. And then we have one more podcast. Our fourth in this series will be companies, and in particular, our company of the year.
So, as well as, and don't forget, our lump of coal company of the year.
Right, our lump of coal company of the year. And we want to get that done this year. So stay tuned. We're going to try and get those podcasts done in the next few days. And this is Joe Cullinane.
And this is Roger Green.
And we'll talk to you soon.